evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 22nd, 2018. Two rebel groups claim the SPLM-IO is violating the September 12 peace deal.
After signing the peace agreement, we thought that now people will be working for peace. So then one of our generals, he went to visit his family because they were having someone who died. Major General Jan Kawai, he reported himself to the IO, then he was allowed to proceed to Mandang, and then in Mandang he was arrested.
And teachers go on strike in Yei River State.
Grade 14 receive £500 per month, which you cannot afford even charcoal, even a bucket of flour, because you are not paid. Your condition at your home, it is horrible. You are going even hungry. 6 months, this person is not helped. What do you think, can this person live?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebels of the Federal Democratic Party are accusing forces loyal to Riek Machar's SPLM-IO of attacking FDP forces in Kokea near Nasir town in Upper Nile. The spokesman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, Changkot Bichokreth, says two FDP fighters were captured by SPLM-IO during the fight over the control of Kotkia.
After signing the peace agreement, we thought that now people will be working for peace. So then one of our generals, he went to visit his family because they were having someone who died, Major General Jan Kawai. He reported himself to the IO, then he was allowed to proceed to Mandang, and then in Mandang he was arrested. So all this time we have been communicating with the IO leadership, including Dr. Riek himself and all his other command. We informed them about the situation, but this person is still in prison until today. And then before yesterday, there was a situation where we heard that the IO, they are moving to attack our area to dislodge us from Court Care, which is in Nasir area. And then immediately we informed our chairman, Honorable Changson, and then he informed Dr. Riek Machar immediately. And we also engaged the other leaders that we have contact with them, like CDR, who is General Gordon Kong. Chol, we informed him about what is happening, that their forces went out to attack our base in Court Care.
How many soldiers do you have in Upper Nile State?
In that area, currently we have around 200 soldiers who are in Court Care, and they are the people that were attacked yesterday, and they were dislodged in the area when IO surrounded the whole area coming from Mandang, and they attack our bases. So we did not know that they are coming to fight us, because we thought we are partner, especially we are opposition together and we are partner in this peace. So we did not know that something like this will happen, and that's why we informed them. And then finally it happened that they had to fight us and they dislodged in the area.
It takes two to tangle. Your forces are also violating the ceasefire. Why would you point fingers at the SPLM-IO?
The agreement that we signed also in September, that we have to abide with all those agreements which we agreed on. So we were just in our base doing our activities, and then unfortunately we were just attacked. We just get a surprise attack, which we did not know and we were not aware of, because we thought that every group is keeping the agreement in the place.
I know you released a statement detailing what happened in Upper Nile State. What are you doing with these reports? Have you made your concerns known to the grantors of the peace agreement?
Yeah, we did it. And even this press release, we also said it to them, and they were informed even yesterday before the attack. Before yesterday, we informed them. And about the arrest of our personnel, so we informed them, including the citizens. They are aware of what is happening.
That's Changkot Bichokreth, the acting spokesperson of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. He was speaking with me from Nairobi yesterday. The SPLM-IO chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, Stephen Parr, says rebels of the Federal Democratic Party have no military posts in Upper Nile State. Parr, however, admitted that his group arrested one person in Nasir for what he called suspicious activities.
You have seen our position. That's what is being reported by our forces on the ground, that they have been on the offensive actually forever. Nasir seems not to fight the government, just fighting us. What is happening in in Upper Nile, I don't think that is the party of Gabriel Chunks and our forces in Africa. They are not aware of this.
The Federal Democratic Party said one of their commanders was arrested by your forces. Why did you arrest one of the FDP commanders?
By the way, that one is a general who called himself a general, and it's not known which party belongs to them. These are people who just want to just create an army during this time. They never had an army in that area. But then he's detained somewhere there because of what he's doing, the teacher thing that he's doing. But I think he's being released.
You signed a peace deal in September, and now all of you are accusing each other of starting the fight. Are you going to implement this peace deal?
This peace, we are implementing it. In fact, we have observed the permanent ceasefire. But there are, you know, other people who want war at this time. You know, NASA in Equatorial has been attacking our positions forever, trying also to recruit from us, and that has been a problem a long time ago. They need to stop now. Again, it is also wrong for those who do not have forces to create forces in the middle of the peacetime. That will create hostilities in the area.
Still in part, two opposition groups are accusing you for attacking them.
Well, what is really happening in Chobat is being investigated. And I think our people on the ground will find out whether this party has armed forces in the area. As for arresting somebody, that could also be part of the investigation. Not that we don't detain people, you know that.
A recent UN report accused your forces in Western Equatoria of harassing and detaining civilians. That's contrary to what you are claiming to be your principles.
As a matter of policy, you know, the SDLMS CLA IO has been there since 2013. You know this. We have been everywhere, and those things which are now being reported, especially in Western Equatoria, are very strange to us. And still, they are being reported by the United Nations. They are also being investigated, and whoever is found guilty of those criminal activities, which are against the rules and the regulation of the SDLMSP and the IO in that area, will be, brought to the book. We don't do those things. We are an organization that was organized to defend the communities from the genocide of 2013 and other genocides that the atrocities of the government that came later in Equatoria, in Barguzar, in Upper Nile. Our records are very clear. We don't do those things.
That's Stephen Parr, SPLM-IO chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. He was speaking with me yesterday from the western U.S. state of Nebraska. The spokesman of the Rebels of the National Salvation Front are also accusing SPLM-IO of planning an attack on NAS bases in Yei River State. Samuel Manasseh says his group has received credible reports of a looming attack on its base in Yei River State.
Actually, yesterday we received reports from National Salvation Front intelligence in the ground that there is a movement of the SPLM-IO forces is spotted in two directions. The other force, estimated to be two platoon plus, moving from Panyume towards our position in Kejikeji. And the other force is distant to areas of Loka and Lanya.
How credible are these reports?
These informations are credible because we have forces in the ground. We monitor the movement of the SPLM-IO. For that matter, the information is indeed credible.
The SPLM-IO has been on record on several occasions saying that there are no NAS forces in Yei River State. You are telling me you have forces on the ground. Who is telling the truth here?
IO all along has been fighting forces of National Salvation Front in Kejikeji last year, and on 14th of this month in Minyori, and they have confirmed that by their deputy military spokesperson. And there was also a video, a statement issued by the deputy military spokesman of the IO, claiming that before they could go to cantonment and also go to Juba, in line with the implementation of the agreement, they will have made sure that they destroy National Salvation Front, who are not signatory to the peace agreement.
The Kiir administration and the SPLM-IO signed a peace deal on September 12. NAS opted not to sign the deal. An attack on your forces is not a violation of the deal because you are not a signatory to the deal.
We signed a cessation of hostilities with them all in December 2017. We are committed to that. And we did not sign the agreement because the agreement did not address the fundamental issues that brought conflict in the South Sudan in the first place. If they think as being partners to the agreement, they have justified reasons to attack opposition, then the question is, why are they fighting among themselves? You know very well that they have been fighting in Kopera. You know very well that they have been fighting in Upper Nile. They have been fighting in Wau. And of course, yesterday, this same IO attacked their peace signatories, the SOA group in Upper Nile.
The SPLM-IO and the National Salvation Front both rebelled against the Kiir administration. Why are you now turning your guns on each other?
The concept of peace in South Sudan itself and some philosophy behind some leadership in terms of superiority, in terms of the who they are, and in terms of understanding exactly the conflict in that country. But I want to tell you that as for peace, as for this revitalized ISIS, there is no any agreement there. And that's why from day one, there's been a total violation. They have been fighting. So this, to me, is a sad news to the people of South Sudan, sad news to the region, sad news to the international community, simply because we have a bad peace.
And your decision not to sign the deal could be considered as sad news too. How do you react to that?
It is not actually a sad news to the people of South Sudan, but instead it is a pro decision to the people of South Sudan who have been yearning for genuine peace.
That's Suba Samuel Manasseh, spokesman of the National Salvation Front. He was speaking to me on Sunday from an undisclosed location in East Africa. The ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism, also known as CITISAM, a body formed by IGAD to monitor ceasefire violations in South Sudan, has not issued any statement on the latest claims by the three rebel groups. The South Sudan Minister of Interior has ordered the police to shut down all nightclubs in Juba. The minister says nightclubs are a source of insecurity in the city and encourage young people to join gangs. The minister's order follows a weekend incident in which two people were killed in the capital when rival youth gang clashed. Police arrested 14 people. From Juba, Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA.
Interior Minister Michael Chengjiek announced the ban on nightclubs during a news conference in Juba this morning.
In this particular time, we are now ordering all the police to close down all the nightclubs. So for those, for the owners of the nightclubs, they should actually bear with us or first seek the police the permission, because we don't want also our kids to die.
Nightclub goers like 38-year-old Johnson David says, clubbing is part of life, adding going to nightclubs help relieve stress among youth who are suffering from the country's prolonged economic hardship.
Club is also part of the things that make people know that there's development or there's freedom in the nation. Unless government want to say there's no freedom. If at all there's freedom, things to do with club has nothing to interfere with security arrangement.
But Chengjiek blames the nightclubs for producing and harboring criminals. He says, yesterday, two people were killed when rival youth gang clashed at Juba's Saint Kizito neighborhood. Chengjiek uses a term to refer to one gang of youth that is considered offensive in the United States.
They were in fact celebrating and doing a party. So during their party celebration, they fought among themselves. And that fight resulted to the one of them died. They went on rampage and attacked the police. The police responded. One of them also died instantly. Now it happened that this group of niggers, they had been frequently doing this. They have done it now more than five times.
It was not possible to get an immediate comment from nightclub owners as several were unreachable by phone. Staff at some of the nightclubs declined to comment on the ban. Chengjek says the police arrested 14 youth. He says police are investigating the incident and will soon charge the culprits in court.
I'm just informing the public that our young people should not associate themselves with niggers anymore. I mean, the fathers and the mothers should inform their kids to distance themselves from the niggers' behavior, because the police will not leave them that way, since they become source of insecurity in the town.
Chengjek says the police are putting in place measures to ensure that Juba is secure prior and during the government-run events to celebrate the signing of the revitalized peace agreement on the 30th. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are tuned to... You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, teachers down their tools in Yeri River State. Find out why.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
What is the daily work of women in your community?
Women in my community are mostly traders. They go out to the markets to buy and sell.
They work at home, fetching water, looking for the firewood, looking after goats, because that's our duty, and taking care of the kids and the food at home.
My community and Benue State, where I come from in Nigeria, our main occupation is farming. So, of course, women goes to farm with their husbands, and some few women work in the government, and, of course, most of their duties is they stay at home and they are the head of the family.
Most of the women in my community own their own businesses and sell their own food. Some of them have convenience shops.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Teachers in government-owned primary schools in Yeri River County are holding a sit-down strike after not being paid for the past 7 months. An education official says his ministry is working on the teachers' demands. For VOA News, Daniel Friday-Martin reports from Yeri.
Volunteer teacher Richard Taban tells Primary 7 pupils to enter their classroom at Chigomoni Primary School. Most of the pupils have been playing under mango trees in the school compound. Dozens of other pupils loiter in Ye Town's streets. Taban gives the children some homework before releasing them early at 10 o'clock this morning. Mary, a 17-year-old Jigomoni Primary 7 pupil, tells South Sudan in Focus no teacher has entered her class for the past week. Mary says she's disappointed the teachers are waging a sit-down strike, but says the government will pay the teachers' salaries.
Our teachers are really suffering, as we are also suffering, because the teachers can come here to school. They don't want to teach. They will tell us that the teachers are not paid for 7 months. Now what will they do? It is better for them to go and dig. It is now, last time, it is the third time. Now we are going to fail. They say, let us fail. It is not their problem. It is the problem from the government. Let the government help us. Let them pay the teachers so that the teachers can able to teach us to pass in the end of the year.
15-year-old primary 8 pupil Nelson says he doubts his class will be able to sit for primary leaving examinations later this year due to the strike.
What had happened in our school, it is amicably dangerous. Government teachers are not coming to the school to teach us. And in fact, it will affect our results and our learning capacity. If the government doesn't resume the salaries of the teachers, we will still repeat the same class. And it's also wastage of resources according to the parents. My appeal to the government is that paying the teachers their several months' salaries so that they resume back to the school and help us to prosper our greatest generation. This country belongs to us, the young generation.
A teacher who prefers to identify herself only as grades for fear of reprisals from the government explains why she and other teachers felt they had no alternative but to go on strike.
We are demoralized. As a woman, I have children. I also need to teach them and even to feed them and sometimes medication and let them at least think of us. If we compare the condition of teachers and other departments, I think the one of teachers is really not good. If the money is there, let them give us. I, the one speaking like this, I'm given just 600, eh? It is grade 12. Now, if we go to the market, even this is not the money.
Grace says teachers will not resume teaching until the State Education Ministry pays the teachers their salaries for the past 7 months. Yei primary teacher Eka Joel says teachers in Yei Town are frustrated and hungry because of their poor working conditions, and he accuses top state education officials of ignoring the plight of teachers.
Grade 14 receive £500 per month, which you cannot afford even charcoal, even a bucket of flour you cannot afford. Because you are not paid, your condition at your home, it is horrible, you are going even hungry. And even you can witness, 6 months, this person is not helped. What do you think, can this person live? We lay down our tools, leaving the government schools. If Yei River State can go without government schools. In our constitution says, Article 1, that we are entitled to be paid. And then these things cannot happen.
Ernelio Baba, a father of six, says he wonders how the education ministry uses the 700 South Sudanese pounds each pupil pays per term in government schools. Speaking in Arabic, Barnaba urges the state government to intervene.
This issue is very hard for us as parents. We have been paying money for our children to learn. And why is it that teachers are on strike? We heard that teachers stayed home because they are not paid for 7 months. The parents' school management committees cannot address this issue. And we want the government to solve this case.
Felix Amule, Director General at the Yei River State Ministry of Education in Yei River State, claims the Ministries of Education and Finance are working day and night to meet the teachers' demands.
The Minister of Finance and the Minister of Education is working hard that soon these government teachers will get their pay, and we appeal that they get to the class as they remain calm.
Amule blames ongoing political and economic challenges for the state's failure to pay teachers for the past 7 months. Last month, Yusto Baba, the deputy governor of Yei River State, said officials were trying to improve the working conditions of teachers with new salary pay grades. Those salaries never materialized. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
Activists, policymakers, and others working toward non-violence movement can strike successful democratic transition, according to an author who recently looked at more than 70 civil resistance movements around the world and talked about it at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Ayen Dengbior has more for VOA from Washington.
Author Jonathan Pinckney looked at 78 civil resistance movements in 64 countries, including Sudan, since World War II, and found that at least 60 ended in at least a minimal democracy. He says one of the lessons learned is that movements should make it a point to foster independent civic forces.
Now, the crucial thing here is during the transitional period to maintain sources of popular accountability through which issue-based mobilization can be channeled.
Data from Pinckney's report called When Civil Resistance Succeeds shows democracies tend to have high levels of mobilization and low levels of street radicalism. It also shows non-democracies indicate low levels of mobilization and high levels of street radicalism. He says keeping new leaders accountable is also an important part of maintaining a democratic transition. Pinckney told an audience at the U.S. Institute of Peace that research shows nonviolent civil resistance does have a strong democratization impact when compared to other forms of transitions. Out of the 78 civil resistance transitions, 20 fell short of the Geddes minimal threshold level of democracy, according to the report. Cases like the civil resistance in Egypt foster skepticism. Egypt's grassroots revolution led to the resignation of then-President Hosni Mubarak, but eventually led to another era of military rule. Pinckney also says general strikes are one of the most important parts of an activist nonviolent toolkit.
It's an extremely powerful tool, but one to be used very cautiously, particularly when we're talking about the context of a transition rather than a movement against a dictatorship. So if you're fighting against a dictatorship and there's sort of widespread buy-in for that, then, you know, the maximum force may be called for in that particular circumstance. But when you're talking about a transition, when the primary things that people are fighting over are, you know, what the specific institutional arrangements are going to be, temporary advantages of power, then employing these extremely effective tools like general strikes can be disruptive and lead to an undermining of faith in the transition process.
Pinckney warns that democratization is a complex political process, and he says one cannot assume that nonviolent resistance will always be effective. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
When it came into force in 1987, the treaty known as the United Nations Convention Against Torture represented a milestone for human rights activists. Since 2006, 87 countries have signed on to the Convention on the Prevention of Torture. It's overseen by a 25-member committee dedicated to ensuring that detainees in member states are not tortured or subjected to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. To find out more about the committee's work, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with its chairman, Sir Malcolm Evans.
We live in a complex world where state actors are often tempted to resort to violence to quash dissent, and where detainees also often suffer from neglect, mismanagement, and lack of funds. But Sir Malcolm Evans says that the idea behind his committee's work with member states is relatively simple to understand.
We've got the right to visit any place of detention that we choose to go to interview and speak to detainees, see what conditions of detention are like, how they're treated.
Under the terms of the convention, those reports remain confidential unless a country permits their release to the public. This offers a face-saving way to put things right. But without the risk of public embarrassment, couldn't governments punish detainees who allege torture and abuse? Evans says no.
We take the question of sanctions and reprisals against those people who speak to us hugely seriously. The legal instruments, the conventions, provide clear obligations that no one should suffer any sanction or reprisal for speaking with us, and that is something we insist upon.
It is impractical for the UN to investigate each detention facility in all 87 signatory countries on an ongoing basis. That's why, crucially, all parties to the convention are obliged to set up their own domestic investigating committees within 1 year.
So on a day-to-day basis, there are independent monitors, inspectors, going into prisons, police stations, psychiatric hospitals, immigration detention centres in many, many countries around the world and many, many countries in Africa, speaking to hundreds, if not thousands, of detainees, getting a real picture of what is going on and being able to make a very real difference to those responsible for the running of the place.
That's Sir Malcolm Evans, speaking with my colleague Adam Phillips in New York. That brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Madame Fu Pa Beko by Kunti Hini.
Yena benu sufidia, yena benu aneshewai. Madam Fupa bekwe jamina mayenu eni. Misu anamisu, odong arahu anamidi. Fami boni chemio, menu mihuo. Fumsu omo nipaho, odong wawuni. Fami boni chemio, menu mihuo. Madam Fupa bekwe.
We have been listening to Kunti Hini with the song Madame Fupa Beko. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Our rejected, yeah, Mr. Before for selling your photo for Mr. Pamibon, a chamber, just a meeting.